Kara's face and tone had lost their emotion. She had gone blank, as if she were telling of last year's beet harvest. But her words, if not her tone, carried more than enough emotion.
My father and I were out back of the house, butchering chickens. When the hunters came, I had no idea what it meant. My father did. He saw them coming down the hill, through the trees. He surprised them, but there were more than he had seen or could handle, and he had the advantage for only a few moments. He screamed at me, "Kari, the knife! Kari, get the knife!" I snatched it up because he said to. He was holding three of the men. My father was big. He screamed again, "Kari, stab them! Stab them, hurry!"
Kara looked into Colin's eyes.
I just stood there. I hesitated. I didn't want to stab someone, to hurt someone. I just stood there. I couldn't even kill the chickens. He did that part.
Colin didn't know if Kara was going to go on. In the dead silence, she decided that if she didn't, the questions would end there. Kara looked away from Colin's eyes, staring off into the visions, and then she did go on.
Someone walked up beside me. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I looked up, and there was this woman, this beautiful woman, the most beautiful woman I had ever seen, with blue eyes and blonde hair in a long braid. The sunlight coming through the leaves danced in little patches across her red leather outfit. She smiled down at me as she took the knife out of my hand. Not a pretty smile, but a smile like a snake. That's what I always called her in my mind after that, snake. When she straightened, she said, "Isn't that sweet? Little Kari doesn't want to hurt anyone with her knife. That hesitation just made you a moored Sith, Kara. It begins."
Kara stood rigid, as if turned to stone.
They kept me in a little room, with little grates in the bottom of the door. I couldn't get out, but the rats could get in. At night, when I finally could stay awake no longer and fell asleep, the rats would sneak into my empty little room and bite my fingertips and my toes. Snake beat me nearly to death for blocking the grate. Rats like blood. It excites them.
I learned to sleep in a ball with my hands and fists and tucked in against my belly where they couldn't get at my fingers. But they could usually get at my toes. I tried taking my shirt off and wrapping it around my bare feet, but then if I didn't sleep on my stomach, they would bite my nipples. Laying bare-chested on a cold stone with my hands under my stomach was a torture in itself, but it usually kept me awake longer. If the rats couldn't get at my toes, they would bite me somewhere else, my ears, or nose, or legs, until I woke with a start and scared them away. In the night, I could hear the other girls cry out when a rat bit them awake. I could always hear one of them weeping in the night, calling for her mother. Sometimes I realized it was my own voice I heard. Sometimes I would wake when rats scratched my face with their little claws, their whiskers brushing my cheeks as their cold little noses pressed against my lips, sniffing for a crumb. I thought to stop eating what they brought me, and left the bowl of gruel and slab of bread on the floor, hoping the rats would eat my dinner and leave me alone. It didn't work. The food only brought hordes of rats, and then, when it was gone, I always ate every scrap of dinner after that when Snake brought it. Sometimes she would taunt me when she brought my dinner. She would say, "Don't hesitate, Kara, or the rats will get your dinner." I knew what she meant by saying, "Don't hesitate." It was her way of reminding me what my hesitation had cost me and my parents. When they tortured my mother to death in front of me, Snake said, "See what happens, Kara, because you hesitated, because you were too timid?" We were taught that Darkin Rall was Father Rall. We had no father but he. At my third breaking, when they told me to torture my real father to death, Snake told me not to hesitate. I didn't. My father begged for mercy. "Kari, please," he wept. "Kari, spare yourself becoming what they want." But I never hesitated. After that, my only father was Father Rall. Kara brought her Ajeel up and stared at it as she rolled it in her fingers.
"I earned my Ajeel for that. The very same Ajeel they trained me with. I earned the appellation Mord Sith." Kara looked back into Colin's eyes as if from a great distance, not merely the 2 steps that separated them, on the other side of madness, a madness others had put there. Colin felt as if she too was turned to stone by what she saw in the depths of those blue eyes.
I have been Snake. I have stood in the dappled sunlight over young girls and taken the knife from their hands when they hesitated, not wanting to hurt anyone.
Colin had always hated snakes. She hated them more now. Tears tickled her face as they ran down her cheeks, leaving wet tracks.
I'm sorry, Kara, she whispered.
Her stomach roiled. She wanted nothing more than to put her arms around the woman in red leather before her, but she couldn't make herself move so much as a finger. Torches hissed. In the distance, she heard muffled snippets of conversation from the guards. A soft ripple of laughter floated up the hall. Water weeping from the stone ceiling echoed as it splashed in a little green puddle not far away. Colin could hear her own heart pounding in her ears.
Lord Rawl freed us from that.
Colin remembered Richard telling her that he had almost wept at the sight of the other 2 moored Sith giggling like little girls as they fed seeds to chipmunks. Colin understood the leap that was a simple giggle. Richard understood the madness. Colin didn't know if these women could ever return from it, but if they were to have a chance, it was only because of Richard. The iron returned to Kara's grim expression.
Let's go find out how Marlin planned to harm Lord Rawl. But don't expect me to be gentle if he hesitates in confessing every detail.
Under Sergeant Collins's watchful eye, a Dharan soldier unlocked the iron door and backed away, as if the rusty lock was the only thing protecting everyone in the palace from the sinister magic below in the pit. 2 more big soldiers effortlessly dragged the heavy ladder closer. Before Colin could pull open the door, she heard approaching voices and footsteps. Everyone turned to look up the hall. It was Nadine with 4 soldiers escorting her. Nadine rubbed her hands together as if to warm them as she stepped through the ring of hulking, leather-clad guards. Colin didn't return the woman's bright smile.
What are you doing down here?
Well, you said I was a guest. As pretty as your rooms are, I wanted to go for a walk. I asked the guards to show me the way down here. I want to see this killer.
I told you to wait upstairs in your room. I told you that I didn't want you coming down here.
Nadine's dainty brow drew together.
I'm getting just a little tired of being treated like a backwater bumpkin.
She lifted her delicate nose.
I'm a healer. I'm respected where I come from. People listen when I speak. When I tell someone to do something, they do it. If I tell a councilman to take a potion 3 times a day and to stay in bed, he very well drinks his medicine 3 times a day from his bed until I tell him he can leave it. I don't care who jumps when you speak, Colin said. Here, you jump when I speak. Do you understand?
Nadine pressed her lips together as she planted her fists on her hips.
Now you look here. I've been cold and hungry and scared. I've been played for a fool by people I don't even know. I was minding my own business, going about my life when I was sent on this pointless journey, only to arrive at a place where people treat me like a leper as my thanks for coming to help. I've been yelled at by people I don't know and humiliated by a boy I grew up with. I thought I was going to marry the man I wanted, but I had that rug yanked out from under my feet. He doesn't want me, he wants you. Well, so be it. Now someone is trying to kill the man I traveled all this way to see, and you tell me it isn't any of my business?
She shook a finger at Colin.
Richard Cipher saved me from Tommy Lancaster laying claim to me. If it wasn't for Richard, I'd be married to Tommy now. Instead, Tommy had to marry Rita Wellington. If it wasn't for Richard, I'd be the one with black eyes all the time. I'd be barefoot back at his shack and pregnant with the offspring of that pig-faced bully. Tommy ridiculed me for fixing herbs to help people. He said it was stupid for a girl to mix herbs. He said my father should have had a boy if he wanted someone to work in his shop touching herbs that sick people needed. I'd never have any hope of being a healer if it wasn't for Richard. Just because I'm not the one to be his wife, that doesn't mean that I don't care about him. I grew up with him. He's still a boy from my home. We take care of our own, like their family, even if they aren't. I have a right to know what danger he's in. I have a right to see what sort of man from your world would want to kill a boy from my home who's helped me.
Colin was in no mood to argue. She was also in no mood to spare the woman what she might see. She studied Nadine's brown eyes,
trying to tell if what Kara had said, that Nadine still wanted Richard, was true. If it was, Colin couldn't tell simply by looking into her eyes.
"You want to see a man who wants to kill us, Richard and me?"
Colin gripped the lever and threw open the door.
"Fine. You shall have your wish."
She gestured to the men with the ladder. They pushed it through the opening and down into the darkness until it thudded in place. Colin yanked a torch from a bracket and thrust it in Kara's hand.
"Let's show Nadine what she wishes to see."
Kara checked Colin's resolve, found it rock solid, and then started down the ladder. Colin held her arm out in invitation.
"Welcome to my world, Nadine.
Welcome to Richard's world." Nadine's determination faltered for only an instant before she huffed and started down the ladder after Kara. Colin glanced around at the guards.
"Sergeant Collins, if he comes up through this door before us, he had better not get out of this hall alive. He wants to kill Richard."
"On my word as a Daharan soldier, Mother Confessor, harm won't get a glimpse of Lord Raw."
With a hand signal from Sergeant Collins, soldiers drew steel. Archers knocked arrows, big hands unhooked crescent-bladed axes from weapons belts. Colin gave the sergeant a nod of approval, took another torch, and started down the ladder. Chapter 9. Dank, heavy air wafted up from the pit as Colin followed Nadine down the ladder. Using the hand with the torch to also hold the side of the ladder made her have to endure the heat of the flame near the side of her face, but she was almost happy for the smell of pitch, because it covered the stink of the air in the pit. Lower down, the wavering light from the torches lit more than the stone walls. They lit the dark figure in the center of the room. Colin stepped off the ladder as Kara rammed her torch into a bracket on the slime-covered wall. Colin slipped hers into one on the opposite wall. Nadine stood transfixed, looking at the man covered in dried blood, hunched before them. Colin stepped past her to stand beside Kara. Kara's brow drew down as she peered at Marlin. His head hung forward, and his eyes were closed. His breathing was deep, slow, and even.
"He's asleep," Kara whispered.
"Asleep?" Colin whispered back. "How can he be asleep while he's standing up like that?"
"I don't know. We always make new prisoners stand, sometimes for days. With no one to talk to and nothing to do but consider their doom, it drains their resolve, takes the fight right out of them. It's an insidious form of torment. I have had men beg to be beaten rather than have to stand alone hour after hour."
Marlin was snoring softly.
"How often does this happen, that they simply fall asleep?"
Kara put one hand on a hip as she wiped her mouth with the other.
"I've had them fall asleep, but that wakes them for sure. If they move from the spot where we've told them to stand, the link brings on the pain. We don't have to be there. The link works no matter where we are. I have never even heard of a man falling asleep and remaining on his feet."
Colin looked over her shoulder, past Nadine, and up the long ladder to the light coming through the doorway. She could see the tops of soldiers' heads, but none were so bold as to stare down into the pit, where there were apt to be deeds of magic. Nadine stuck her head between them.
"Maybe it's a spell. Magic of some sort."
She straightened, pulling her head back when she received only glares in answer. More out of curiosity than an attempt to wake him, Kara lightly jabbed Marlin's shoulder. She pushed her finger into his chest and his stomach.
"Hard as a rock. His muscles are all locked rigid. That must be how he's able to stand there like that. Maybe it's some sort of trick he learned as a wizard."
Kara didn't seem convinced. With a twitch of her hand, so slight Colin almost missed it, Kara spun her Aegil up into her fist. The pain Colin knew it caused her to hold her Aegil didn't show on her face. It never did. Colin snatched Kara's wrist.
"You don't need to do that. Just wake him, and don't use your link with his mind, his magic, to give him pain unless it's absolutely necessary, unless I tell you so."
Displeasure registered on Kara's face.
"I think it's necessary. I can't have this. I can't hesitate to exert my control. Kara, there is a great gulf between prudence and hesitation. This whole thing with Marlin has been more than odd from the first. Let's just take it one step at a time. You've said that you have control over him. Let's not be impetuous. You do have control, don't you?"
A slow smile spread on Kara's lips.
"Oh, I have control. no doubt of that. But if you insist, I will wake him the way we sometimes wake our pets, then.
Kara bent forward at the waist, slipped her left arm around his neck, tilted her head, and gently gave Marlin a long kiss on the mouth. Colin felt her face go red. She knew that Denner sometimes awakened Richard like that, before torturing him again. With a satisfied smirk, Kara drew back. Like a cat coming awake from a nap, Marlin's lids slid open. His eyes had that quality in them again, that quality that made Colin's very soul want to shrink back. This time, she saw more than she had before. These eyes were not merely those of great age. These were eyes unvisited by fear. As he regarded the three of them with slow, unflinching, calculating deliberation, he bent his fisted hands back at the wrists and arched his back in a feline stretch. A depraved grin spread onto his face, a tint of wickedness expanding like blood seeping through white linen.
So, my two darlings have returned.
His disquieting eyes seemed to see more than they should, to know more than they should.
And they brought a new bitch with them.
Marlin's voice had been almost boyish before. Now it was deep and gravelly, as if coming from a muscled man weighing twice as much, a voice steeped with unquestioned power and authority. It exuded invincibility. Colin had never heard such a dangerous voice. She retreated a step, clutching Kara's arm and pulling her back with her. Though Marlin didn't move, she felt the coiling of menace. Kara. Colin put a hand behind, forcing Nadine back as she withdrew another step. Kara, tell me you've got him. Tell me you have control. Kara was staring, mouth agape, at Marlin.
What?
She abruptly unleashed a powerful strike. Her armored fist only snapped his head a few inches to the side. It should have taken him from his feet. Marlin regarded her with a bloody smile. He spit out broken teeth.
Nice try, darling, Marlin said in a rough voice. But I've got control of your link with Marlin.
Kara rammed her Aegil in his gut. His body flinched with the jolt, his arms flopping ineffectually. His eyes, though, never lost the deadly look. The smile didn't falter as he watched her. Kara took two steps back on her own.
What's going on?
Nadine whispered.
What's wrong? I thought you said he was helpless.
Get out,
Kara whispered urgently to Colin. Now! She glanced up the ladder. I'll hold him off. Lock the door.
Wanting to leave?
Marlin asked in the grating voice as they moved toward the ladder.
So soon, and before we've had a little talk. I've enjoyed listening to the talks you two have had. I've learned so much. I never knew about Maud Sith.
But I do now.
Colin halted.
What are you talking about?
His predatory gaze moved from Kara to Colin.
I learned of your touching love for Richard Rawl. It was so thoughtful of you to reveal the limits of his gift. I suspected much of it, but you confirmed the extent. You also confirmed my suspicion that he would be able to recognize another with the gift and that it would raise his suspicions. Even you were able to see something wrong in Marlin's eyes.
Who are you?
Colin asked as she pushed Nadine back with her toward the ladder. Marlin shook with a belly laugh.
Why, none other than your worst nightmare, my little darlings.
Chigang?
Colin whispered incredulously.
Is that it? Are you Chigang?
The belly laugh boomed around the stone walls of the pit.
Oh, you have me cornered. I confess, it is I, the Dreamwalker himself. I've borrowed this poor fellow's mind just so I could pay you a little visit.
Kara slammed her Aegil against the side of his neck. A puppet arm swept her aside. Kara returned almost instantly, crashing into his kidneys, trying to take him down. He didn't budge. With jerky movements, he reached down, caught her braid, and flung her back against the wall behind him as if she were a stick doll. Colin winced at the sound of Kara smacking the stone. She rolled face down on the floor, blood soaking into her blonde hair. Colin shoved Nadine toward the ladder.
Get out!
Nadine seized a rung on the ladder.
What are you going to do? I've seen enough. This ends now.
Colin went for Marlin,
or Jagang, or whoever it was. She had to end it with her power. Screaming, Nadine shot past Colin and across the floor as if she were sliding across ice. Marlin caught the flailing woman, spun her around, and gripped her by the throat in one hand. Nadine, her eyes wide, choked for air. Colin skidded to a halt as Marlin twitched up a cautionary finger. Tut-tut!
I'll crush her throat!
Colin retreated a step. Nadine gulped air when he released the pressure. One life? For all those you will otherwise kill? Do you think the Mother Confessor would be unwilling to make such a choice? At Colin's words, Nadine, in renewed panic, writhed in his grip, her fingers digging frantically at his hands. Even if Marlin didn't crush her throat, he was touching her, and if Colin took him with her power, Nadine would be lost too.
Perhaps you would, but don't you want to know what I'm doing here, darling? Don't you want to know my plans for your love, the great Lord Rawl?
Colin turned and screamed up the shaft of light.
Collins! Shut the door! Lock it!
Above, the door slammed shut. Only the spitting torches remained to light the pit. The sound of the door clanging shut added its echo to the hissing torches. Colin turned back to Marlin. Keeping her eyes on him, she began slowly edging around the room.
What are you? Who are you?
Well, actually, that's a difficult philosophical question to answer in terms you would understand. A dreamwalker is able to slip into the infinite spaces of time between thoughts, when a person, who they are, their very essence, doesn't exist, and inhabit that person's mind. What you see before you is Marlin, a loyal little lapdog of mine. I'm the flea on his back that he brought into your house with him. He is a host, which I thought to use for certain things.
Nadine thrashed against her captor, causing him to squeeze tighter to maintain his grip. Colin pursed her lips and urged her to shush. If she continued fighting him, she would get herself strangled. As if snatching the lifeline of Colin's command, Nadine stilled in his grip and was able at last to pull breaths.
Your host will shortly be a dead host, Colin said.
He's expendable. Unfortunately for you, the damage has already been done, thanks to Marlin.
With a furtive glance to the side, Colin checked her slow progress toward the face-down Kara.
Why? What has he done?
Why, Marlin has brought you and Richard Rawl down for me. Of course, you have yet to suffer what I have wrought, but he has done it. I had the privilege of witnessing the glory of it.
What have you done? What are you doing here in Aiden Drill?
Jagang chuckled.
Why, I've been enjoying myself. Yesterday, I even went to watch a Jala game. You were there. Richard Rawl was there. I saw you both. I wasn't pleased to see that he changed the Brock, replacing it with a lightweight one. He's turned it into a game for the weak. It's meant to be played with a heavy ball, and by the strongest, the most aggressive and brutish players, those with the true lust to win. Do you know what Jala means, darling?
Colin shook her head as she ran through a list of her options and priorities. Foremost on the list was using her power to stop this man before he escaped the pit. But first she had to find out all she could if they were to stop his plans. She had already failed once at that task. She couldn't fail again.
It's from my native tongue. The full and proper name is Jalad Kjin, the game of life. I don't like the way Richard Rawl corrupted it.
Colin had almost reached Kara.
So you infested this man's mind so that you could come and watch children play a game? I thought that the great and all-powerful Emperor Jagang would have better things to do.
Oh, I've had better things to do. Much better.
His grin was maddening.
You see, you thought I was dead. I wanted you to know that you failed to kill me at the Palace of the Prophets. I wasn't even there. I was enjoying the charms of a young woman at the time, actually. One of my newly captured slaves.
So you aren't dead. You could have sent us a letter and not have to go to all this trouble. You came for some other reason. You were here with the Sister of the Dark.
Sister Amelia had a little task to perform, but I'm afraid she's no longer a Sister of the Dark. She betrayed her oath to the Keeper of the Underworld so that I could destroy Richard Rawl.
Colin's foot touched Kara.
Why didn't you tell us all this before, when we first captured Marlin? Why wait until now?
Ah, well, I had to wait until Amelia returned with what I sent her for. I'm not one to take chances, you see. Not anymore.
And what did she steal from Aidendrill for you?
Jagang chuckled derisively.
Oh, not from Aidendrill, darling.
Colin squatted down beside Kara.
Why would she no longer be sworn to the Keeper? Not that I'm unhappy about it, but why would she betray her oath?
Because I placed her in a double bind. I gave her the choice of being sent to her master, where she would suffer for eternity at his merciless hands for her past failure with your love, or to betray him and escape his grasp for now, only to intensify his anger for later. And, darling, you should be unhappy about it. Very unhappy, as it will be the downfall of Richard Rawl.
Colin forced herself to speak.
An empty threat.
I don't make empty threats.
His smile widened.
Why do you think I went to all this trouble? To be there at its doing, and to let you know that it is I, Jagang, who has brought it upon you. I'd hate to have you think it was simply chance.
Colin shot to her feet and took an angry stride toward him.
Tell me, you bastard, what have you done?
Marlin's hand jerked up, raising one finger. Nadine made a strangling sound.
Careful, Mother Confessor, or you'll be denying yourself hearing the rest of it.
Colin stepped back. Nadine gasped for air.
That's better, darling. You see, Richard Rawl thought that by destroying the Palace of the Prophets, he kept me from gaining the knowledge it contained.
Marlin's puppet finger waggled.
Not so. Prophecies were not unique to the Palace of the Prophets. There have been prophets about elsewhere, and there are prophecies elsewhere. Here, for example, there are prophecies in the Wizard's Keep. In the old world, there are prophecies, too. I found a number of them when I excavated an ancient city that once thrived at the time of the Great War. Among them, I found one that will be Richard Rawl's undoing. It is an extraordinarily rare type of prophecy, called a bound fork. It enforces a double bind on its victim. I have invoked the prophecy.
Colin didn't have the slightest idea what he was talking about. She quickly squatted and lifted Kara's head. Kara scowled up at her.
You idiot,
Kara whispered under her breath.
I'm fine. Leave me. Get answers. Then signal and I will use my link to kill him.
Colin dropped Kara's head and stood. She started inching back toward the ladder.
You're talking babble, Jagang.
She moved more quickly, hoping Jagang would think she had found Kara dead. She was halfway to the ladder, although she had no intention of trying to escape. She intended to unleash her power on him, Nadine or no Nadine.
I don't know anything about prophecy. You're making no sense.
Well, darling, it's like this. Either Richard Rawl lets the firestorm of what I have wrought rage out of control, fulfilling one fork of the prophecy, in which case it kills him, too. Or he tries to stop what I have done, fulfilling the other fork of the prophecy. On that fork, he is destroyed. See? He can't win, no matter which he chooses. Only one of two events can now evolve, only one of the two forks. He has the power to choose which one, but either will be his doom.
You are a fool. Richard will choose neither.
Jagang roared with laughter.
But he will. I've already invoked the prophecy through Marlin. Once invoked, there is no turning back from a bound fork prophecy. But enjoy your delusions, if it will please you. It will make the fall all that much more painful.
Colin paused in her tracks.
I don't believe you.
You will? Oh, yes, you will.
Empty threats. What proof have you?
Proof will come on the red moon.
There is no such thing. You are full of empty threats.
Colin lifted a finger toward him as her fear dissolved in the heat of rage.
But I want you to know of my threat, Jagang, and it is not empty. I have seen the bodies of the women and children you ordered slaughtered in Ebenicia, and I swore undying vengeance on your imperial order. Even prophecy will not stop us from defeating you.
If nothing else, she needed to at least provoke him into revealing the prophecy. If they knew it, perhaps they could thwart it.
That is my prophecy to you, Jagang. Unlike your pretend prophecy, it has words to it.
His belly laugh echoed around the pit.
Pretend!
Well, let me show you the prophecy, then.
One of Marlin's hands lifted. Lightning exploded in the pit. Colin covered her ears as she ducked, hunching to protect her head. Stone chips howled through the air. She felt a sharp pain as one sliced across her arm and another speared the side of her shoulder. She felt the sickening feeling of warm blood soaking down her sleeve. Above their heads, the lightning jumped and leaped across the wall, incising the stone, leaving in its wake lettering she could just see through the blinding flashes. The crash of lightning cut off, leaving jagged afterimages across her vision, the smell of dust and smoke choking her lungs and the cacophony echoing in her head.
There you go, darling.
Colin rose to her feet, squinting up at the wall.
Gibberish. That's all it is. It means nothing.
It's in High Dahaaren. According to the records, in the last war we had captured a wizard, a prophet, and of course since he was loyal to the House of Rohl, my ancestor dreamwalkers were denied access to his mind. So they tortured him. In a delirious state, and missing half his intestines, he gave forth this prophecy. Have Richard Rohl translate it.
He leaned toward her with a venomous sneer.
Though I doubt he will want to tell you what it says.
He pressed a kiss against Nadine's cheek.
Well, it's been delightful, my little journey, but I'm afraid Marlin must be going. Too bad for you that the Seeker wasn't here with his sword. That would have ended it for Marlin.
Kara!
Colin went for him, mentally beseeching the good spirit's forgiveness for what she was going to have to do to Nadine, too. Kara sprang up. With impossible strength, Jagang heaved Nadine through the air. The woman cried out as she tumbled violently into Colin. Colin landed with a grunt onto her back on the stone. Her vision prickled with floating dots of light. She couldn't feel anything. She feared it might have broken her back. But sensation returned with tingling pain when she twisted to the side. She gasped to get her wind back as she struggled to sit up. Kara, on the far side of the room, let out a shrill, piercing scream. She crumpled to her knees, covering her ears with her forearms as she shrieked. Marlin leaped onto the ladder as she and Nadine wrestled to untangle themselves from each other. Marlin, hands and feet to each side of the ladder, sprang up it in spurts like a cat going up a tree. The torches puffed out, plunging them into darkness. Jagang laughed as he ascended. Kara screamed as if she were being torn limb from limb. Colin finally managed to shove Nadine aside and shuffle on her hands and knees toward the sound of Jagang's mocking laughter. She could feel blood soaking all the way down her sleeve. The iron door exploded outward, clanging against the stone on the other side of the hall, the sound resonating with a boom through the halls. A man cried out as it crushed him. With the door gone, a shaft of light bathed the ladder. Colin scrambled to her feet and went for it. As she stretched up for the ladder, the pain in her shoulder caused her to recoil with a cry. She reached up and yanked out the sharp shard of stone. The blood dammed behind it gushed from the wound. Fast as she could, Colin scuttled up the ladder in pursuit of Marlin. She had to stop him. There was no one else who could do it. With Richard gone, she was the magic against magic for all these people. Her wounded arm shook with the effort, and she could barely grasp the ladder.
Hurry!
Nadine called out from right behind.
You'll get away!
From below, Kara's shrieks seared Colin's nerves. Colin had once felt the awesome agony of an Aegil for a fraction of a second. Mord Sith endured the same pain whenever they held their Aegil, yet not the slightest grimace ever registered on their faces. Mord Sith lived in a world of pain. Years of torture had disciplined them in their ability to disregard it. Colin couldn't imagine what it would take to cause a Mord Sith to scream like that. Whatever was happening to Kara, it was killing her. There was no doubt in Colin's mind. Colin's foot slipped through a rung. Her shin bone whacked painfully against the rung above. She yanked her leg back in a rush to get to Jagang.
Her flesh grazed the side, catching and driving a long splinter into her calf. She cursed in pain and charged up the ladder. Clambering through the opening at the top, she slipped and fell to her hands and knees in a chaos of viscera. Sergeant Collins stared up at her with dead eyes. Jagged white ends of rib bones stuck up, holding back the ripped leather and mail of his uniform. His entire torso was rent from his throat to his groin. A dozen or so men writhed in agony on the floor. Others were still as death. Swords were embedded to their hilts in the stone walls, axes lodged there too as if stuck in soft wood. An enemy with magic had scythed through these men, but not without cost. Close by lay an arm, severed above the elbow. By what it was wearing, she recognized it as Marlin's. The fingers of the hand clenched and unclenched with measured regularity. Colin pushed herself up and turned to the door. She clasped wrists with Nadine and helped her up into the hall.
Careful!
Nadine gasped at the bloody sight. Colin expected her to faint or scream hysterically. She didn't. Men bristling swords, axes, pikes, and bows were charging up the hall from the left. The hall to the right was empty, silent and dark beyond a lone torch. Colin went right. To her credit, Nadine chased right after her. The screams coming from the pit sent shivers up Colin's spine. Chapter 10. Beyond the last hissing torch, the hall disappeared into blackness. A soldier lay in a crumpled heap to the side like dirty laundry waiting to be collected. His blackened sword lay in the center of the hall, its blade fractured into a tangled fray of twisted steel strips. Colin paused and studied the still silence ahead. Just as there was nothing to be seen, there was nothing to be heard. Marlin could be anywhere, hiding around any intersection, crouched in any corner, with Jagang's self-satisfied smirk on his face as he lingered in the darkness to put an end to the pursuit.
Nadine, stay here.
No, I told you, we protect our own. He wants to kill Richard. I'll not let him get away with it, not so long as I have a chance to help.
The only chance you will have is to get yourself killed.
I'm going.
Colin had neither the time nor desire to argue. If Nadine was going to go, at least she could make herself useful. Colin needed her hands free.
Then grab that torch.
Nadine yanked it from the bracket and waited expectantly.
I have to touch him, Colin told her. If I touch him, I can kill him.
Who? Marlin or Jagang?
Colin's heart pounded against her ribs.
Marlin. If Jagang could get into his mind, I expect he can get out.
But who knows? If nothing else, at least Jagang will be gone and his minion will be dead. That will end it. For now.
That's what you were trying to do back in the pit? What did you mean about making a choice, one life for all the others?
Colin grabbed her face, squeezing her cheeks.
You listen to me. This isn't just some Tommy Lancaster wanting to rape you. This is a man who is trying to kill us all. I have to stop him. If anyone else is touching him, when I do, they will be destroyed along with him. If you or anyone else is touching him, I won't hesitate. Do you understand? I can't afford to hesitate. Too much is at stake.
Nadine nodded. Colin released her. She redirected her anger to the task at hand. She could feel blood dripping from the ends of the fingers of her left hand. She didn't think she could lift her left arm, and she needed her right arm to touch Marlin. At least Nadine could hold a torch for her. Colin hoped that she wasn't making a mistake, hoped that Nadine wouldn't slow her. She hoped she wasn't letting Nadine come for the wrong reasons. Nadine took Colin's right hand and placed it to her bleeding left shoulder.
We don't have time to fix this now. Hold that wound closed as tight as you can until you need your hand, or you'll lose too much blood and not be able to do what you must.
A bit chagrined, Colin squeezed the wound.
Thanks. If you're going to come, then stay behind me and just light the way. If soldiers can't stop him, you can't hope to do better. I don't want you getting hurt for nothing. Got it. Right behind you. Just remember what I said and don't get in my way.
Colin stretched up, looking back behind Nadine to the soldiers.
Use arrows or spears if you get a shot, but stay behind me. Get some more torches. We need to corner him.
Some of them trotted back to retrieve torches as Colin started away. Nadine held her torch out ahead of her as she trotted to keep up. The flame fluttered and roared in the wind of their flight, illuminating the walls, ceiling, and floor for a short distance around them, creating an undulating island of light in a sea of blackness. Close behind, men with torches created their own islands of light. Heavy breathing echoed through the hall as they ran, along with the thud of boots, the jangle of chain mail, the clang of steel, and the roar of flame. Above it all, in her mind, Colin could still hear Kara's screams. Colin halted at an intersection, panting to get her breath as she looked ahead and then down the corridor that branched to the right.
Here!
Nadine pointed to blood on the floor.
He went this way!
Colin looked up the dark hall ahead. It led to the stairwells and up into the palace. The other corridor that branched off to the right led under the palace in a labyrinth of storerooms, abandoned areas once used in the excavation of the bedrock the palace was built atop, access tunnels to inspect and maintain the foundation walls, and drainage tunnels for the springs the builders had encountered. At the ends of the drainage tunnels, massive stone grates let the water out through the foundation walls, but prevented anyone from getting in.
No,
Callan said. This way to the right.
But the blood! Nadine protested. He went this way!
We've seen no blood until this place. The blood is a diversion. That way leads up into the palace. Jagang went this way, to the right, where there are no people. Nadine followed after, as Colin started down the corridor to the right.
But why would he care if there are people? He killed and wounded all those soldiers back there.
And they managed to take off an arm. Now Marlin is wounded. Jagang won't care if we kill Marlin, but on the other hand, if he can escape, then he can use Marlin to cause more harm.
What more harm can he cause than hurting people? Hurting all those people upstairs and the soldiers?
The wizard's keep, Colin said. Jagang doesn't have command of magic, other than his ability as a dreamwalker, but he can use a person with the gift. From what I've seen so far, though, he doesn't know much about using another's magic. The things he did back there, simple use of air and heat, are far from inventive for a wizard. Jagang only thinks to do the simplest of things with their magic, things of brute force. That is to our advantage. If I were him, I would try to get to the keep and use the magic there to cause the most destruction I could. Colin turned down an ancient stairwell carved from rock, taking the steps two at a time. At the bottom, the rough, tunnel-like hall ran in two directions. She turned to the soldiers still racing down the stairs behind.
This is the end of side two. You should now change the balance control to the full right position and listen to side one again, this time hearing part B. Simply reverse this cassette, adjust